Okay, so today we're going to continue on in our study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The last time we stopped at this point, 2.4.250, which describes the different emotions, it enumerates the number of emotions that a devotee who has achieved Bhava Bhakti or Prema Bhakti. I just want to remind everybody that this is not ordinary. These are not ordinary emotions. These are emotions that arise in a person whose sadhana bhakti has become successful, in the sense that he has gotten to either the next stage, which is bhava bhakti, or he has gotten to the final stage, which is prema bhakti. So this is what we're discussing right now. In such a person, there are 41 possible emotions. Out of these, 33 are the vyabhichari bhavas. We looked at the different vyabhichari bhavas in some depth last time and the lecture before that one. And then there is one mukhya means primary, sthayi. Prabhupada translates that as continuous ecstasy. Continuous or steady or permanent. This has to do with the eternal permanent relationship a devotee has with Krishna. It could be as mother or father or as friend or as servant. Each of these are primary relationships. As we know, there are five, out of which shanta, neutrality, lacks a direct relationship, but other four, those are primary. So that's the mukhya sthayi bhava. In addition, there are also seven secondary sthayi bhavas. The secondary bhavas include hasya, smiling, krodha, anger. So there is krodharati, there is hasyarati, laughing, ecstasy, Prabhupada translates it. So these are seven. So one primary, seven secondary sthayi bhavas, and 33 vyabhichari bhavas added together make 41 emotions. So, okay, so Pranagana Prabhu is asking me to define these. So, I think I define this sthayi bhava as the permanent, mukhya sthayi bhava, the permanent ecstasy. Prabhupada calls it the continuous ecstasy that one experiences. That could be likened to an ocean, you know, extremely deep, like Yashoda's relationship with Krishna, maternal relationship, extremely deep. Now, in that relationship of Yashoda with Krishna, or in that ocean, there could be some disturbances. So the surface, there might be waves that come up and down. So these disturbances are an analogy for vyabhichari bhavas, 33 vyabhichari bhavas. For example, self-disgust is one. And I think I showed an example for Yashoda, feeling self-disgust, or Nanda Baba, all these. So there are different emotions there that come, but these are temporary. They rise and they fall in the ocean of the permanent relationship of Yashoda with Krishna. Combined together, they make an emotional experience that the devotee experiences and also Krishna experiences. Does that make sense? Is that what you wanted?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Just to refresh, Prabhu is explaining very nicely about this sthayi bhava. So I'm going to, just for my understanding, I want to make sure you all are on the same page, same platform. So we are going. Permanent emotion, it's a very deep emotional attachment each devotee has. Where? Where do you have a feeling for God? In the heart. I want you to think like this. Then, because the whole today presentation is very nice, but we have to just, because I am a little dull sometimes, I have to go like that, try to capture it. So each of us has a permanent, dominant, eternal, emotional attachment towards Krishna. Where? In the heart. as identifying self, each of us, as shelter of that love. You get it? When you identify Sthayi Bhav, where am I in Sthayi Bhav? I am the shelter, I am holder of that pure love. For who? For Krishna to do what? To enjoy. He wants to enjoy the love that I am holding. Where? In the heart. Everybody on the same page? So we have eternally a dominant, permanent emotional attachment for God. That's for sure. But where it is existing right now? In our heart. So the whole discussion is that in that identifying myself as a shelter or holder of that eternal love called Sthayi Bhav in Sanskrit, for Krishna to enjoy. So when it will be tested, when it will be tested, this will be called one part of Vibhav. You will hear that word Vibhav has a two part. One part is that when that love I have, I'm holding for the Lord, to be when it will be tested. When we take shelter of Guru, and that Guru represents the Krishna's eternal associate, they have this all the time testing going on. It is always tested. When it will be tested? When we have a shelter, alamban. Alamban means there has to be a person who is directly in connection with Krishna, serving him on that base, and we take shelter, then we will also gradually come to that platform. What will cause that feeling for the Lord will come? That's called uddipan. What will cause, what will stimulate that ignite that feeling, that will be called uddipan. So when Prabhu use those words, those are very deep emotional meaning. If we just get little more familiar, because like every time he does, cannot say the whole sentence to say what is Vibhav. Everybody is with me? Then it will be easier. When he says Sthayi Bhav, fixed attachment, rati, we should be aware, oh, he's talking about my eternal dominant feeling for the Lord in my heart. He used the one word, rati or Sthayi Bhav, but we should immediately, our brain should calculate that I have in my heart a permanent dominant emotional attachment for the Lord. I am as the shelter in identifying of that Sthayi Bhav, and Lord is the enjoyer of that. You follow? So when he used that word, you just immediately calculate in you and start going from there. Then it will become easy. Then question comes, I have that emotional. When a devotee in pure devotional service, how they act, what is their lifestyle, what is their behavior towards their devotional service with God? When they serve, what they have feeling, it outside manifests. I feel so much emotional with Radha Damodar. I'm going to sing. They start singing. That's called Anubhav. Anubhav has a two concept. One, when you go easy, like you want to sing. Nobody is in your house. You just feel emotional for the Lord. You want to sing. You follow? That is Anubhav. But when you feel like you want to do like a little, throw it, you know, body is like dancing, Krishna, you know, you just want to say something loud, to you feel so much. Those are called khapan, sita and khapan, two types, anubhav. There's 14, but these are divided into two categories. It's all, this whole thing is not a foreign language, it's our own eternal language. We have to be familiar with it. So you got it, what Sthayi Bhav is, anubhav is, vibhav. Then some emotion that we don't have any control. Like after Prabhupada had a very emotional ecstatic feeling for a while that he could not say anything, and all the GBC members, a lot of senior sannyasis were there, they're all sitting there, they never understood or heard what they're supposed to do. When Prabhupada in ecstasy, he voice choked and he started crying, he's not singing. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, what they supposed to do? They didn't know. Indratunda Maharaj says he was a servant in India that time. So they didn't know what to do. Then after a long time, Prabhupada came back to notice that. How he came back? Hamsudhu Maharaj, he was also one of the leaders. He came out and he, because they are all looking at each other, what are we supposed to do? The speaker, Prabhupada, is like overwhelmed with his choking voice and shedding tears. He's not speaking and they never trained in the Western world or even in India. They don't know what to do when a great personality have a ecstatic feeling. So, Hamsudhut Maharaj, he just came out and he took the midanga and started dancing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then Prabhupada opened his eyes and came out. You follow? These are incidents happen in our accessible time. So because those devotees who experience, they are here, they are speaking. Then after a little while, some GBC member went to Prabhupada and they asked him, what are we supposed to do when we feel that kind of emotional ecstasy? Prabhupada went like this. And he's shedding tears and he went like this. Didn't say anything. And they didn't hear answer anything either. It's understood. Prabhupada was kind of like a little shy and overwhelmed. The emotion of his Guru Maharaj, Mahaprabhu, was so much in the heart. Heart agitated, just like he says. So how do you serve Krishna? How do you serve Krishna? With these emotions. You follow? These are our eternal asset, like a bank balance. Like, hey, what, how we do in this world? We act, we drive, like a car, we have a house, like this. So these are like asset. With those assets, we serve Krishna. That's why it is the most important why Prabhupada says that no one can understand Krishna consciousness without Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Okay, so there is one PowerPoint presentation, the first lecture I gave where I outlined all these things and the relationships between them. So for anybody who has missed those, please email me or contact me. And I can give you those PowerPoints. So now we looked at these emotions. There are 41. There are the 7 sthayi bhavas, which are secondary. There is the 1 mukhya sthayi bhava, and there are 33 vyabhichari bhavas. So these are emotions. So now the emotions interact with the mind, like Prabhu was saying, and they create transformations in the body. These are the sattvika bhavas and the anubhavas. Sattvika bhavas are not under the control of the person, and anubhavas are, there is some conscious exertion of will. So almost all activities that are done in the spiritual world with the mind, the conscious effort, they fall under the classification of anubhavas. Every action, every emotion in the spiritual world, even if you look at Krishna Leela, the Srimad Bhagavatam, or even the Bhagavad Gita, everything can be analyzed in the framework of these things. Sattvika bhav, anubhav, vyabhichari bhav, sthayi bhav, and vibhav. These 5 things encompass every and any leela that Krishna performs. And so anubhavas are, because they're all ecstasies. Everything that happens in the spiritual world is ecstasy. So they can be classified under ecstasy. Now we're going to go into the sthayi bhav, these different types of relationships with Krishna, in the next chapter. And Rupa Goswami is setting up the stage for this. So he's going to now talk about these, the primary emotion, as Prabhu was saying, the permanent emotional attachment. So this is one bhava which is natural to a person. And the other emotions, the other 40 emotions, they are incidental. So like I said, it's like a deep ocean. The ocean is the permanent thing, and then there are these waves in it which are incidental. Incidental means depend on a specific pastime. Sometimes Yashoda might be happy, sometimes she might be sad, sometimes she might be angry. But in all these, she remains Krishna's mother. And all these emotions are in the context of her relationship with Krishna as a mother. So that is natural to her. And so there is a natural bhava for each of us, as Prabhupada explains it, that we have forgotten. So Rupa Goswami gives some beautiful examples here to understand this. He says, the natural bhava spreads internally and externally, just as red color is completely identical with naturally red substances. Thus, the natural bhava becomes very apparent just by a slight contact with the cause, which is Krishna. So for Yashoda, whenever Krishna is in her, whenever she contacts Krishna, either with her senses or the mind, then her parental affection, which is natural, just becomes very apparent. That's the point here. So this is a natural bhava, and it will be present internally, that means in the mind, in the subtle body, the spiritual subtle body, and externally. Externally means Yashoda looks like a mother, you know, she's a mother. Now the Sanskrit, I don't have the Sanskrit for this verse, because it became too long.
I remember one commentary on this. This in the beginning, as Prabhu says, that these are transcendental emotions, not mundane. Even though in the material world we see people cry, people dance, they sing, they do everything almost like here, Bharat Muni's explanation. So one thing to be understood, what is the difference between this line, it says, that's a Ranjita Raga. It says, externally, just as red color is completely identical with the natural red substance. The difference between material love that experience and the spiritual love, Rupa Goswami Pada used this, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a commentary. If you put a crystal glass, or just glass, but clear, transparent glass, if you paint red inside, you follow? Now it looks like red. And you drink, you wash, you everything, what happened eventually? The red paint fades or disappears, feels soft, because it's not bonded with the glass. Material love is considered same thing, red color. But it's considered that Maya, in second canto Prabhupada writes, there's a layer of very extreme happiness layer given in our sense organs, where we actually draw pleasure. We think actually there's a very heavy enjoyment from sex and all this. But if you really think, it's nothing but some demigod put all kinds of way. We don't see them, we think we are enjoying, but actually they are allowing us to experience them. So, this is what it's called. Now, what is spiritual enjoyment here, it says, is different. If you take the same red paint and melt the glass, now together you reconstructing or rebuilding a glass with that red chemical, what will happen? Will it come out?
No.
That is spiritual. Yes, that is spiritual. The big difference, it almost looks like this, but it will disappear. You love a person, after a while, he may die, or I may die, or something will happen that this material love, it's like a little paint. It is also there, but it has no existence permanently, a temporary manifestation. But spiritual love has no temporary. It is eternal. Sthayi bhav is you, identical. Because the rag or the passionate love for the Lord and you are bonded in one substance. Like the red color and the glass melted and recrystallized into one cup. Inseparable. Your feeling for God and you, inseparable. But in the material world, it's like a painter. So you love him. Sometimes you think like, I just want to have my own time. It's not possible in spiritual world like this. It's practical. In spiritual world, you cannot live without God. You want to be all the time. You cry. You want to be all the time. Never enough. Even you give everything to Lord Krishna, after you giving everything, you come to a point where another big door opens, that there's another big thing to give. It's like an ongoing, it's so ecstatic. It's very unimaginable from material concept, very difficult. But we have to have some developed desire. So this experience on Rupa Goswami was giving as much possible. Make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I remember the Bhagavad had a rag, the word rag was given. So that's why he explained it, the difference between the real rag and the spiritual rag. What is the difference? So he was using this raga ranjita. Ranjita means painting. So if somebody, the same thing.
The love in the spiritual world is bonded right within your nature. It's like, you know, well, like I said, it's bonded. But the love here is temporary in so much as it's kind of like it. So you can understand that you have an affection for someone. But no matter what you do, there will be a time, place, and circumstance that completely unravels it. It has to finish. No matter how strong your desire is, it has to finish. You know, even if you look at Romeo and Juliet, supposedly the ultimate selfless love story, but it finished, you know. And even though they died in love, when they went, it was finished. So, but in the spiritual sky, there is no way. Plus, there is the ongoing manifestation of that love ever increasing. It doesn't reach a saturation point. It doesn't reach a level. And then the moment that there appears a level, then there is another manifestation that reveals, oh my God, that was a pond. Now I'm going to show you an ocean of the same love. And then when you find that ocean, now a universe of that same love. And then after that, outside the universe. So it's always increasing. It's never decreasing. Even though the emotions that you experience in the spiritual world serve the purpose of increasing that love, still it's like Prabhuji was saying, it's waves up and down, but there's the ultimate ocean of love that you're experiencing. And then how you're experiencing that is between you and Krishna.
Anybody knows that emotion?
And then I guess, just like in the ocean with the waves, you also get that rogue wave,
yes,
that super wave that comes.
And then there's still one who comes with that. I mean, you love somebody after a while, and you don't think. You
don't say it, because then you'll have a fight. But you generally don't think. Yes, ma'am?
So what happened with the idea of eternal souls? Like, we are eternal souls. And if we have, like, pure love for somebody, like, say, like my son that I immediately recognized when he was born, I think that should be eternal, too. We are always eternal loving souls. That's the, our nature, to be loving.
Yeah, but when your child was born,
when your child was born, you could not probably stay away more than a few hours, right? Where is your child now? Whole day, did you see him? So you see that. Your self-example, that the paint on the glass is not bonded. It's like a peeling off, slowly, slowly. Eventually, disappear. But spiritual love is not like this. It's one intrinsic. The love for the Lord and myself are one. Yeah, inseparable.
Can I answer part of the question? So, Prabhupada used to say that the love between a mother and a son, or daughter, is the closest that one can come to spiritual love in the material world. And yeah, your son might not be here, but your love for him is still the same, as I'm sure. As so only mothers can understand this, you know. We can, I can. The point that is being made is, which, this one? Okay. So, yes, by looking at the relationship between the mother and the son, one can deduce how exalted spiritual love is. Because these relationships are with everyone, not just with, between mother and son, but the relationship with Prahlad Maharaj and Narsingadev, servant and master, is also of the same quality and same nature. So I think it's okay for us to understand, at least get some hint, brief hint, faint hint of the love in the spiritual world based on our experience in the material world. So the attempt here is not to say that there is no love at all in the material world. But the idea is to understand that whatever love we do experience here, you know, the spiritual love is magnified so many times more. And the other aspect, of course, is the unavoidable reality that all of us will be passing on from this life. The Bhagavatam explains that we are like straws on the ocean. Sometimes we are together and sometimes we are apart. So, yes, we love our relations, our relatives, our children immensely, beyond measure, but that will be taken away from us. And this is an unavoidable reality. So the spiritual wisdom helps us see that, not in an effort to dilute our love or to question our love, but rather to remind us of the temporary nature of our existence, which we cannot escape no matter what. Of course, the question then is, why are we in the material world? And then the whole philosophy kicks in, the original defect that we have as souls, misguided, misdirected desires towards Krishna. The other aspect also is that our love for our son or daughter is also a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. It is by Krishna's mercy that we got our son or daughter. And it is Krishna's love that we are experiencing through our children and through our relatives. So seeing anything in the material world independently of Krishna is kind of the root of the problem. Does that help, Mataji? I can see you.
So the real love is only between the entity with God, no, between the entities, between the souls.
Also, by the Krishna in the center. Pure love with Krishna and His. There's two things Prabhupada says. Krishna and Krishna's. So Krishna, Krishna's main devotee, Radharani, His mother, His father. Krishna has a father, Nanda Baba. So Krishna calls him Baba. All his friends, millions, they also call him Baba. Because Krishna calls him Baba. Krishna calls Mother Yashoda Maya. All these coward boys, everybody calls her Maya. Why? Because Krishna. So through Krishna, pure love is there. As Prabhu says, that in this world, yes, everything is mercy of Krishna, but it is temporary. You will be disappointed. You have a relationship with someone so deeply, but after you die, you don't know where you're going, where she is going. Only devotees' case is exceptional. Possible devotees, they can go all together in spiritual world. But in karmi's love, it is not permanent. We know that. Death will separate. In Bhagavatam, it's so sharp and heavy. It says sometimes even enemy takes birth as your relative or your children or your, you know, somebody very close to take revenge. It's very harsh if you think like. But in spiritual world, there is no such thing. There's never such thing. It's pure, sublime. Even Mahaprabhu, before he appeared, he was always saving Sivas Thakur when they throw him outside from Devananda Pandit's place. Somebody took him to his house, which is few miles away, put him on his bed. So Mahaprabhu says, you remember, there was 25 years before Mahaprabhu appeared. See, you remember when they throw you out of the house and you found yourself, woke up from the bed, and you wonder, how did I come here? Was it a dream? I was thrown by those people. I was emotional. And he started crying. Oh, my Lord, you were there? He said, yes, I did it. Gangadas, one of his teachers, early childhood life, when he was in Navadvip, one time the Muslims were trying to attack and trying to convert Hindus by just spraying water. Doesn't make any sense in the Western logic. But the society or caste system was so corrupted, like no scientific base. Just sprinkling water, you are no more Hindu. I don't understand how you take it. You know, like, but they did. They did take it. Maybe I was there, I didn't think that way. Who knows? But nonetheless, so Gangadhar Bhattacharya, he was so traumatized that they're going to make him Muslim. They didn't know. So he took his wife and child and started running to escape from his house. Because Muslim was just making every Hindu Muslim. So he went to the Ganges, and his evening time, no boat, nobody can help him to cross. How is he going to cross? Don't know swimming, his wife and child, you know, how are you going to cross? He was crying and praying to God. All of a sudden he saw an old boat, an old man came from somewhere. And he says, how much you'll pay? He said, I'll give my life, I'll work for you whole life. Okay, get in. But of course he didn't work. The boatman let him go. And when Mahaprabhu revealed this, he said, that was you? He said, yes. Lord never gives up his relationship with the devotee. Never. Once you are coming back to Krishna consciousness and surrender, from that moment he will never let you go. Prabhupada says, even if you something happened that you may fall down, he will not let you fall. He will pull it out. Prabhupada gave that an analogy, like a little child doesn't know how to walk in spiritual path towards going to spiritual world. So in his tumbling, you know, all of a sudden he's about to fall, the father holding his hand, picks him up, don't let him. So surrender is priority. If we make the surrender right now in this life, then your relationship with Lord will never, ever. But you may not see him. You know, it's a very interesting point. Like Prahlad Maharaj. Nrisimhadev blessed him, Brahmaji, everybody came, inaugurated him as the emperor of the world. Then he was 5 years old. Can you imagine 5 years old, your child? The Lord is saying, now you are emperor of the whole universe. Wow, very nice. But he's 5 years old. But of course, he's pure devotee. He wants to, so Lord told him, he told the Brahmaji, you interrogate him, he will take the post of his father. Hiranyakashipu was the ruler of the whole universe. So he took that position, and then Lord told him, you learn how to rule everything. So he has a big, big minister there training him up. One time he took the Prahlad to learn how to shoot arrow and fight, you know, because he's a Kshatri, he has to learn. So he went in a forest, and after, he's thinking, why Lord wants me to do this? He's thinking. He's 5 years old, but his brain is like a most mature of any person ever. You know, he's thinking, why Lord wants me to rule? I love him, I miss him, what is, what? But Lord ordered him, so he wants to obey. But he's not understanding why. So one day when he went for learning how to shoot arrow, so he went very deep forest with his all soldiers and minister. And all of a sudden, he saw a wild boar attacking the sages. They do meditation. It's not that Prahlad was interested to. He wanted to protect the sages also. They go in a deep forest and meditate. But sometimes wild boar, wild, you know, hippo even. You just learned that hippo is the number one human killer, even though they're vegetarian. But as for killing human, they're the number one in this world. And fortunately, they're not here in Alachua, so don't worry. It's in Africa mostly. So then, Prahlad Maharaj came to deep forest and he saw this wild boar. He's like, wild, they're disturbing the sages. They are in a cave meditating. So all of a sudden he thought, this one boar, like a leader, is too wild. So he took the arrow and he's ready to shoot. And the minister told him, yeah, point it. You know, he has a teacher teaching him. He shot the arrow. Then when he claimed to claim the pig boar, there's another arrow. I shot one arrow. How did the other arrow come? Prahlad Maharaj, you know, was thinking. Then one black guy, he's a hunter, you know, he lives there. He comes. He said, this is my. He doesn't know who is Prahlad Maharaj. He didn't know that he's the emperor of the world. He has his own world. You know, hunter, they live in the forest. They have their own world. So Prahlad Maharaj says, well, this is my boar. He said, no, this is my boar. I shot arrow. Prahlad says, I shot arrow too. He said, no, your arrow is after me. I can see that. I shot the arrow. I killed him. It's my right too. Prahlad Maharaj is thinking, Lord Nishnyadev, the Supreme Lord made me the emperor, but this guy doesn't. But he didn't want to disrespect him. He understands that he's also ultimately servant of Krishna. But to establish the rules, say, well, you may have your point, but I have also my point. I'm going to take the bow. He said, no, you cannot take it. He said, why not? He said, because I shot arrow, it's my right. So Prahlad Maharaj is thinking, should I argue or? And the minister is saying, maybe we can resolve it a little later. We are too far from the palace, we should go back. Alright, leave the pig here. You do not touch. Guard will be securing this and tomorrow I'll see. So he goes back. The first time after Lord Nishinadev left, he felt a little depressed. See, what am I doing? I want to serve. Lord wants me to rule and make everybody devotee. I want to do it. In the middle of, like I'm facing like a little uncomfortable. It's not his nature. How do I act? So he went to the temple and he saw the Nishinadev and he became very emotional. You know how they serve? We discuss how they serve, how the devotees serve the Lord? With emotion. Thank you. So he felt making a garland. So he made a beautiful garland. So many flowers, Prahlad Maharaj. He's not known as a garland maker, but that day he was emotional. He wanted to make garland. Took the garland and he offered it to Lord. And he did worship and spoke to the Lord. My Lord, I'm trying to follow. I'm sorry, I'm being already disturbed. Like I went for a little hunting training. I already got disturbed that I could not resolve. So he comes back next day with his minister and everyone. He was surprised. The hunter didn't leave. He's sitting there. That's his place. He doesn't. He said, unless I collect my figure. But then he saw from far, the hunter is a little mysterious hunter. Because he has a garland. Who would have a garland, a hunter in the forest? So he's thinking, he's a hunter. He's an aborigine. He's kind of like an outcast. Why does he garland? I mean, who will make a garland here? He could not. And more he came to close, he looks at, this is the same garland I made. It was like almost same garland. And he's looking. Hunter, he says, can we decide? Can I take my... Yes, but excuse me. How did you get this garland? He said, that's not the point. Point is my pig or your pig? But Prabhupada Maharaj's mind is so bewildered, he's looking at it. It's the same garland I made. He said, you're thinking, it's my Lord, or should I say it or not say it? But it's like matching so close. Then he came to touch, he said, hey, what are you doing? We are supposed to divide and you're just touching my garland. So my Lord, you are my Lord, why are you testing me? And he fell at the feet. Then Nrisimhadeva appeared. It was not a hunter, it was Nrisimhadeva. So then Prahlad Maharaj started understanding, oh, he wants to release my service through emotion, how, what I do, what I go. See, this is a very nice in how this Purana gives this story. When Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a comment on that. He said, when we serve, before you come to temple, what is your thinking? Why you want to come to temple? Why you want to see the Lord? You follow? He's giving a three stages. And then when you came to temple, you worshipping, what is your consciousness? What are you feeling for the Lord? What you are, you externally I'm singing, externally I'm dancing, you see. But you don't see what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking. You understand? Emotion and action is one. When it becomes one, then Lord accept it. I'm doing outside, but what am I thinking inside? I may not be thinking of Him. I'm just thinking, did you like my voice when I sing? Is anybody liking my voice? I may be thinking that. I supposed to be thinking, is it pleasing Krishna? But so emotion is actually what Krishna takes more than action. So Prahlad Maharaj was overwhelmed. So from that moment, he was always relishing that anything obstacle comes, is maybe the Lord they are behind. So he would pray and he ruled so nicely that the whole country became saturated with Krishna consciousness. It answers? Spiritual love. We want that kind of love. Spiritual love, eternal love. Then your family member, they are all pure devotee. You want to love them because it's pleasing Krishna. It becomes so tasty. More.
Okay, so continuing on, we've only done three slides today, but we have to stop at 8:15 today. So let's see how much we can get through. Now, just to bring you back here, there is a natural bhava, that means the permanent relationship, maternal, paternal. Now, that is always there, like an ocean. But then there are other bhavas that appear, and then Rupa Goswami gives the analogy here, that just as white cloth appears red, when red dye is applied to a cloth, the incidental bhavas become situated in the devotees by various causes and then become visible. That means that Yashoda Maya might be angry, and she might be angry for some time, a sustained period of time. Then her bhava there is anger, but really she is the mother, you know, and she cannot be angry at Krishna for too long. Like in the Damodar Leela, she's angry, but then she's repentant. So it just appears red, but it's actually white. That's the point that's being made.
Ask the question. Yeah. When Krishna is crying, Rudantam Hurinetra Jugma Mrijantam Karambuja Jugmena Satanka Netram. The karambuja means two hands. Krishna is rubbing his eyes and he's crying. Is that Krishna enjoying? Is that happiness? Yes? No? Or is it really sad? Like? Huh? It is ecstasy actually. When we understand this, that Krishna is crying, actually it is ecstasy he's feeling. Through this
seven, as Prabhupada says, be familiar why he is mentioning this. This seven is not primary, but that actually comes, it seems like it takes over, like white cloth became now saffron or red. No, okay, red. So now you don't see even white, but it's red. So now Krishna is crying, or Krishna was angry when Mother Yashoda went to birth. Is that Krishna tasting those? Yes. We have to understand those are very high form of ecstasy. Mundane world, angry is not a tasty. Nobody likes anger. Nobody likes anger. But in spiritual world, anger is a very ecstasy feeling. Krishna is crying, is actually enjoying. That time you can pray, my Lord, that you are crying, it is so nice. Somebody crying, it's nice. In the mundane world, they will probably think like he has no heart. But it is actually ecstasy. And Mother Yashoda is the only one can cause this. You know, one, the devotee, Navadvip, so his disappearance day is coming in a few days, or a few weeks. And he's doing bhajan. So one time he's walking on the bank of river. And few boys came with a little, you know, pebbles and dust, throwing at Lord Krishna like this. I don't know if in India, if you go to the Holy Dhamma, I can see that. It happens. So he turned back. One more time, Mother Yashoda will hear my complaint. I'm going to go right now. They all disappear. This is how devotees see, they taste, even hear. You follow? Krishna's mischievousness, how they relate with the devotee. Now, how do you control Krishna? Through Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda can punish the absolute truth. That is enjoyable. But not as a servant. Hanumanji was asked to come to Vrindavan one time. Hanumanji, as soon as he heard, he immediately remembered Mother Yashoda. Twisted my Lord's ear. I cannot even think. It's like a very... He says, please tell Garuda, please go and tell the Lord, I'm being old and sick. I'm not feeling well to go. Is it possible Hanuman ever answer like this? No! But he does not, he doesn't come to Vrindavan because he's scared. What if he sees that his Lord is being facing a stick? He doesn't know how to handle it, so he doesn't even want to see. It's from far he's paying obeisances. Very difficult. But it is also taste. Hanuman is also tasting like this. Mother Yashoda also tasting like this. And when you have a very pure love like this, you can talk like that too. That's why our acharyas are exhibiting like this. You follow? So Sridhar Bhavaji says, one more! I'm going to complain to Mother Yashoda. All these appear. And then he started laughing. Ha ha ha, Mother Yashoda scares you, I know. But nobody else saw Krishna. Everybody saw like a local baby, children. And Krishna was there. Only he saw.
So these examples are very vivid. How they saw. That's how we learn from the sun.
So now all these emotions, the avichari bhavas, the 33 emotions, the sthayi bhavas, the 7 secondary emotions, these act on devotees in the spiritual world depending on the state of their heart, state of their mind. So Rupa Goswami says there is a variety of minds of the various types of devotees. So a devotee in Shanta would have a different mind. A devotee in Dasya, devotee in Sakya, and so on. So in accordance with the variety of minds, there are also various gradations of the appearance of these emotions. So let's see what this means. So even if these bhavas, these different self-disgust, envy, anger, happiness, or crying, or and so on, they appear strongly in hearts, but it depends on the quality of the heart. If the heart is garishtha, which is heavy, gambhira, which is deep, mahishtha, which is expansive, or karkasha, hard in nature, then these bhavas do not lead to this external transformation that we talk about. You know, ecstatic crying, or these hair standing on end, or rolling on the ground, things like that. Because the heart is not responsive enough in these conditions. If it is heavy, if it is deep, if it is expansive, if it is hard, and we'll see what these are in a minute. Then there aren't external transformations, even though the bhavas are present, the person is, that bhava, that spiritual bliss, ladini, is there, but we don't see the external transformations of that. Whereas when these bhavas arise, even slightly, in hearts which are laghishtha, light, uttana, spread on the surface, shodhishtha, small, and komala, soft, then there are extreme transformations of the body and the senses. And then you can see these sattvika bhavas and anubhavas manifest. So, Prabhupada has written a beautiful summary of this part. I was going through it and it follows exactly these verses. So the heavy heart is like a pile of gold. The light heart is like a pile of cotton. So what this means is wind cannot move gold, but wind can move cotton. So in the same way, emotions can move a heart which is soft, and that's desirable. But the heavy heart is not desirable. The heavy heart which is not moved by these emotions. So the bhavas, the emotions, act like wind in response in relation to these two types of hearts. Then Rupa Goswami analyzes further and further. So the deep heart is like the ocean, the shallow heart is like a pond. And then the bhavas, the emotions for such hearts, are like pinnacles of high mountains. I'm not entirely sure what this means, but I'm just letting, you know, some things you just have to hear, I guess. The expansive heart is like a city, the small heart is like a hut. Bhava is like a lamp or an elephant for these two types of hearts. Prabhupada explains here that if you have elephants in a city, nobody's going to notice because it's a huge city, it's expansive. But if you have an elephant near a small hut, then, you know, it's noticeable. Well, that's a big elephant in relation to the heart. So, there are degrees of hardness and there are degrees of softness. There is hardness like the thunderbolt, there is hardness like gold, and there is hardness like lamp. So bhava is like fire in relationship to these three types of hard heart. So the thunderbolt never becomes soft. So the bodily transformations never happen if the heart is like the thunderbolt. This is seen in the hearts of those who perform severe austerities, those who are jnanis, who are too focused on jnana, rejection of the material world. And who are extremely focused on austerities, you know, retiring to the forest and so on. They have this thunderbolt hardness. They are more in shantarati, more in neutrality, as we'll see later on. But their heart does not become soft. Whereas gold, so there's an intermediate step stage, which is gold, which when you heat it becomes soft. So gold has some hope. But it really requires very strong emotions to melt that heart. Lac becomes soft with just a little heat. With a little bhav, it becomes soft. Now, softness is also of 3 degrees. There is beeswax. Prabhupada also mentions these 3. Beeswax, butter, and nectar. In relation to these, bhava, the emotions, are like the sun. So, beeswax and butter can become liquid from if you put it out in the sun, it's a hot day. But the hearts of the dearest devotees of Govinda are naturally soft, like nectar. So it follows that the softness of the heart is preferable to all the other ones. Now, Rupa Goswami says, however, if the principal sthayi bhava becomes very prominent, then it can disturb, then all types of hearts will be disturbed by the vyabhichari bhavas. Jiva Goswami gives some light, throws some light into this, so I thought I would include this here. And then maybe we should stop the interest of time. So heavy, deep and expansive hearts are caused by having mixed motives in a relationship with Krishna. Light, spread and small hearts manifest by having no personal motives. So if there is some mixed devotion, then the person ends up with these states. Mixed motives. Whereas a person without any mixed motive, personal motives who serves Krishna, do not have those qualities. And then Jiva Goswami gives some examples here, we'll see. So the awareness of the greatness of Brahman produces hardness in the heart, blood pressure. If one is too taken by this magnificence of Krishna, then you know the softness doesn't come. That means intimacy with Krishna in these different moods doesn't come. Awareness of sweetness of Krishna produces softness in the heart. Jiva Goswami, this is his commentary on 2.4.268. The appreciation of Krishna's sweetness and the soft heart produced in his devotees are causes of astonishing effects. So this is where all these sattvic bhavas and everything become visible. This is explained in the famous verse Prabhupada used to quote often. This is in the 10th canto, Ittham satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam yatanam pradevatena. So this verse says, and this is Bhanuswami's translation, I should have put Prabhupada's here, because I like that one better. Here is the supreme person who is considered the impersonal Brahman by great sages. He is considered a most worshipable form by the dasya bhaktas, the servitors. And he is considered the son of a human being by ordinary men. Now these boys who have performed many, many pleasing activities in their past lives are playing with that Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a cowherd boy. And Jiva Goswami comments, the reason he produces this verse here is that in this verse, the minds of these devotees, there is difference, right? Some see him as a servant, as a master, others see him as an ordinary person, and still others see him as the impersonal Brahman. So, you know, the vision is different. So Jiva Goswami is saying this is not because of material gunas like sattva guna or raja guna, but it's actually different bhavas. So these bhavas are of two types. There is the prakruta, inferior bhava. Even among the spiritual emotions, there are some gradations. And there is the exalted or bhagavata bhava. So then those kanishtha devotees possess prakruta bhavas, and they have this garishtha, gambhira, mahishtha, that means deep, heavy, hard hearts. So even though they experience these ecstasies, it doesn't melt it enough. Yeah, we got 1 minute.
Give you one example, and the next week we'll go details on this, because these are very sweet. So for an example, we just read the emotion, your emotion is compared to fire. If you think your emotion is compared to fire, now fire is exemplary. So fire in relation to diamond, fire, heavy fire, blazing fire in contact with gold, and heavy fire in contact with shallow. Look at your own heart. When you hear that in Damodar Lila, absolute truth, who is Supreme Personality of Godhead, controller of everything, he's crying. Those whose heart is like a diamond, cannot be melted, they will think, God does not cry. It's just the Hare Krishna writing. I went to Hare Krishna temple, they said, God started crying. It's like a crazy. Why God should cry? Does it make any sense? You understand? Their heart is called hard, like diamond, or vajra, thunder.